From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where nearly 50 years after the city's infamous busing crisis, the pain from court-ordered school desegregation still lingers, and the public school system itself remains intensely segregated. But as Boston looks to elect a new mayor and possibly bring back an elected school committee, can things finally change for the better? For more on this, we're joined now by GBH's Meg Woolhouse. Meg, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Paris.
So there's no question that desegregation was a defining moment for Boston, Meg. Remind us what happened then.
Well, Boston gets its racist reputation from its violent reaction to court-ordered school desegregation. That violence was sprawling, and while it was especially bad in South Boston and Charlestown, it extended beyond those neighborhoods, too, into places like East Boston and Hyde Park. The NAACP filed the federal lawsuit because blacks had little political power, holding zero elected offices, and white officials wouldn't listen to advocates' pleas for better schools for black children. So the federal court came in, and one of the solutions was to bus thousands of black children to white schools and vice versa. And those black students were subjected to all sorts of racism for years in some places. Thousands of black children who had rocks and names hurled at them by white people of all ages as they went to school or to sporting events.
Throwing sticks and rocks. He was breaking the windows.
Cedric Turner was one of those kids. He was a football player at English High School.
And we're like, what the hell? And then we had to play a game?
He's 64 now and a grandfather, but the pain for him is still visceral.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen those images dozens of times in different documentaries, Meg. And yet, that was almost 50 years ago. So why is it still relevant today?
So Boston schools today are more segregated than ever. Students of color are now the majority of the kids in Boston public schools. Only about 14% of the public school population is white. So activists say educational resources are still not spread fairly along race and power lines. Some urban schools don't offer clubs, extracurriculars, things like AP courses, or even working water fountains. If this sounds very familiar, it should. Many of these concerns are what prompted the NAACP to file its lawsuit nearly 50 years ago. Here's Marcy Murningham, who was hired as a Harvard graduate student to help implement the desegregation order in the 70s.
The problems that were manifest then are still in play. There's no doubt about it. Okay, there's no doubt about it. And that is the challenge of our time. The remedy may be very different and should be different, but the problem is still there.
And of course, we hear it's not so much that they're sitting next to white children that makes them benefit more. It's the fact that they have access to those resources. And so with all that, Meg, what's the solution?
Well, if you look at Cedric Turner's story, there's plenty that worked in his educational experience. He won an athletic and later academic scholarship to college. He also had mentorship and encouragement and even financial help from Bob Peterkin, who was then the city's first black headmaster. And Peterkin helped end the interracial violence at English High School by offering an extensive list of clubs and extracurriculars for kids. So, more history here. In the wake of court-ordered desegregation, former Mayor Rafe Lynn took control of the Boston School Committee, and he crusaded to get the power to personally appoint its members. That move had a big effect because it politically disenfranchised neighborhoods of color just as they were gaining traction. Today, a movement is formed to give that power to elect a school committee back to voters so that they can elect whoever represents their interests. That question will be on the ballot next month. And as to further solutions, that will largely be a question for the next mayor.
And what are the two mayoral candidates saying about this?
Yeah, so as for the mayoral candidates, they have two very different approaches. Michelle Wu, the front runner, supports a hybrid school committee with both elected and appointed members. The other candidate, Anissa Asabi George, says she basically wants to keep the current system, but would consider allowing the city council to appoint committee members. So that's a big difference between the two candidates. And the city council is also looking at this. Two Boston city councilors, Ricardo Arroyo and Julia Mejia, are mustering support for the change, calling it a matter of restorative justice and righting past wrongs.
Well, we'll be paying close attention to what happens on that ballot next month. That's GBH education reporter Meg Woolhouse. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. Beacon Hill lawmakers are weighing a bill that would make state prison inmates serving long sentences and in some cases life sentences eligible for parole after 25 years. Legislators heard testimony on the measure yesterday, including from victims' families. Tom Ritzer, who opposes the bill, spoke on behalf of his daughter, math teacher Colleen Ritzer, who was killed 8 years ago.
Colleen was raped and murdered in 2013 by one of her students at Danvers High School. My message is simple. Don't do this. Don't do this to the victims. Don't do this to the families.
But Janet Connors, whose son JoJo Turner was killed in 2002, supports the bill. She says the justice system makes mistakes.
I know that every day, guilty people go free and innocent people get convicted. I know that many people who need substance abuse and or mental health treatment get incarcerated instead.
The bill is co-sponsored by State Representative Liz Miranda, who says a life sentence without parole is equivalent to the death penalty. In other news, acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey says she's not ruling out any possibilities when it comes to alleviating the substance abuse and homelessness crisis at the intersection of Melniacass Boulevard and Mass Ave. Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins has made a proposal to house some of the people camped there in vacant space at a jail facility and involuntarily commit them to drug treatment. The idea has prompted criticism, but Janey says she's open to hearing more about the plan.
I am intrigued by what the sheriff has proposed, and I'm certainly open to hearing more about how we use a public health approach to serving the needs of those who do need treatment.
Janey says she's in talks with Governor Charlie Baker and others about how to handle the crisis. And finally, the Red Sox are moving on to the divisional round of the MLB playoffs. The Sox beat the Yankees at Fenway last night in the American League wildcard game, and that's good news for the team, fans, and those who sell food outside the park. Vendor Harry Patera says a longer postseason means more business.
It's a big help after COVID. You know, we were all out of work for a long period of time. And it's a big help. It's a big boost.
The Red Sox will now face the Tampa Bay Rays in a best-of-five series that's set to begin tomorrow night. And y'all know how the song goes. We will root, root, root for the home team. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since Fenway Park and a longer baseball season, I'm Paris Halston. Be well. Hey, you're a podcast listener, obviously. Would you like this show along with all of WBUR's best news stories of the day about Boston and the region all in a podcast feed? Well, I suggest you search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe. You'll be able to find just the local segment of Consider This, plus our best coverage in business, tech, politics, education, and arts, all in one place. Search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe.